Okay, so one of the reasons for today's fast, there are several, was the translation of Torah into Greek. That the Gemara tells us that the Torah is translated into Greek. It was a forced translation by Ptolemy. Ptolemy was one of the Greek kings, one of the Greek kings before Antiochus. In case you know the history, you don't know the history. What happened was that we know from our what's canonized in our Tanakh that the story of the Jewish people sort of ends with Divrei Hayamim, Ezra and Nehemiah. At that time as well, we have the Megillas Esther. All happening towards the end of the prophetic age and the end of the canonization of Tanakh. At that time, so the Jewish people had been exiled from the land of Israel by Babylonia. The Babylonians then fell to the Persians. And the Persian Empire came and took over the known world. At that point, Ahasuerus, we know, is the one who comes in two kings in. Ahasuerus takes over the Persian Empire. And then what happens is that the Persian Empire then falls to Alexander the Great. Alexander of Macedonia, Alexander the Great, goes and conquers the known world and takes over the entire world. Up until that point, Judea, Eretz Israel, was a province of the Persian Empire. Right? Ezra and Nehemiah are sent back to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Rebuild Yerushalayim. The Persian Empire falls to the Greeks, and Shimon HaTzadik, the Gemara tells us, in Yuma, goes out to meet Alexander the Great. As Alexander the Great is taking over the world, he wants to march on Yerushalayim, but a nes happens, and Shimon HaTzadik, who was the end of Anshei Knesset HaGedola, beginning of Pirkei Avos, goes out to meet Alexander the Great, adorned in the begadim of the Kohen Gadol, because he was indeed Kohen Gadol. And Alexander the Great tells them, we're not marching on the city, we're making a peace treaty. Because every time I go into battle and I win, I see an image of this man in my dreams. So there's a peace. And the land of Israel did not suffer a war against the Greeks. They just became a province of the Greek Empire. Alexander dies and his entire malchus, his entire kingdom, is then divided up into different by his different generals, one of whom is Ptolemy. Ptolemy is the head of the Greeks, the Egyptian Greeks, as opposed to the Syrian Greeks. The Syrian Greeks are the ones who Antiochus is with. Israel changes hands. You know, it's the bridge between the different lands. It changes hands, of course. But Ptolemy is the king. Ptolemy gathers together 70 sages and forces them to translate the Torah. And the Gemara Megillah tells us that miraculously, they all translated to Greek the exact same way, with even the same changes. And even though such a fantastic thing was the last time that you met 70 rabbis that all had the same opinion, I mean, that was a pretty big miracle, right? But but beside all that, darkness covered the world for 3 days, I believe it was the 8th, 9th, and 10th of Tevis. One of the reasons why we fast is because of this darkness, because the Torah is translated into Greek. Now you'd say, what's the, not big deal, what's the big deal with this? What's wrong with that? What's wrong with translating the Torah into Greek? We all like Art Scroll, we'll tolerate the Sansino, but we like Art Scroll, right? We like the Koran also. What's wrong with translation? One of the big problems is with translation, with a forced translation of that, is that in English we have an expression, you lose something in the translation. And it's true. When a person speaks any language and you try to translate its idioms, its culture, it doesn't all translate. We say in the Shemoneh Esrei in the Amida for the Regalim, Tabachar Tanu Mikol Amim, right? From Tanu Mikol HaLashonos, you lift it up above all the other languages. You need a synonym for nationality. What do we need? A Lashon. You lifted us up above languages. a language includes within it the culture, the way of thought. There are expressions in every language that are germane to the language. There's a famous machlokas, a famous discussion amongst the Ramban and the Rambam, Maral weighs in on this as well, in terms of when we call Hebrew, not the modern Ivrit, that's another story, I'll hopefully come around to it at the end, but Lashon Kodesh as spoken in the Tanakh, as Lashon Kodesh. Why is it Lashon Kodesh? The Rambam posits that the reason why is because there are no words for our either excretory or reproductive functions in Lashon Kodesh, in Hebrew. Rather, everything is a euphemism. Everything is just a euphemism connoting. For urine, it's meiraglayim, water that comes from between your legs. There's no direct expression. And that's what makes Lashon Kodesh. Maral says no. Maral says that that's not why what makes Lashon Kodesh, Lashon Kodesh. Lashon Kodesh is a language which is used to express concepts of divinity. Baruch Sha'amar v'haya olam, Breishis bara Elokim, v'yomer Elokim, v'hi or. God spoke and created the world. And it's our understanding that this, what did he speak? Didn't speak Greek, he spoke Hebrew. He spoke the Lashon Kodesh. Because it's a language set aside for matters of divinity, to express divinity. So that was the reason, you know, why it's called Lashon Kodesh. The Torah's then translation to Greek loses something in the translation. And this is part and parcel of the fast. Now, if you remember, there's another element of the fast which we think about most, militarily speaking, was the siege of Jerusalem. The siege of Jerusalem, a siege is all-encompassing. That's the point of the siege. Anyone who went to Masada ever, you stood up there, and you recall the Roman siege, how the area was entirely encircled. And a siege is a very, very horrible way to go. They cut off all of your supplies. They don't have the Geneva Conventions, of course. So they cut off all of your supplies, and, you know, the situation becomes very, very grim very quickly. It's all-encompassing. Maral oftentimes tells us that when we have a bunch of different events happening at the same time, Devarim Gedolim and Vimikra, big things don't happen by chance. Rav Huttner has a beautiful reflection. Rav Huttner, Rosh Hashiva of Chaim Berlin, went to Prague, to the grave of the Maral, and the Rav Huttner spent many, many years and thousands of pages in one of his magnum opi, Pachad Yitzchak, trying to decode the Maral for us. So he stands there by the grave of the Maral saying, Rebbe, that you taught us. And it's a beautiful reflection. It's worthwhile to see inside. You taught us that big things don't happen by chance. So events that take place and that the Gemara calls them, they're happening all the same day. It's not by chance and retains an essence, a shared essence between the two. So the darkness of the translation into Greek and the darkness, the all-encompassing darkness of a siege are essentially, in essence, the same idea. Because an exile of speech is also all-encompassing. That we've established that language is not just words spoken, but contains within an entire culture. So the exile of the Torah into the Greek is tantamount, often, to the exile of the Torah's concepts as well. Once we start playing with words, we change meaning. Rav Huttner as well, wrestles with this a lot in the entire chelik of Shavuos. He talks about this a lot, a concept in which where you're mishing, you're confusing different words together. He calls it an eruv musagim, a combination, a eruv, like an eruv tavshilin, an eruv, a mixing of concepts. That when you mix up concepts, things get simished, right? There's no word for it in English, so well, timished, you know, confused and mushkababbled, but that's not even very precise. As a result, things don't come out entirely properly. Let me give us an example. When a person talks about growth in Torah study, the Yiddishisms that was used was steigen und wachsen. And we don't have such colloquialisms that in English. Normally we just borrow it for growth in Torah. They'll use different colloquialisms like steigen wach. But we don't have such things. And then we think, does that mean like qualitatively? Does that mean qualitatively? That, you know, when we say grow in Torah, does that mean I get taller? What does that mean? But the concept that there is a concept known as growth in Torah already, as we're pushing the conceptual limits of the power that words hold behind them, you start to understand and start to contact the fact that yeah, that language has a power, and the translation of concepts has a power. Whether we're dulling the light of Torah by changing some of the words when we're translating it, it's losing something in translation. And we're lost in translation. Our vistas are oftentimes lost in translation. Rav Kook, interestingly enough, in his beautiful Hebrew, equates and hopes and prays that the triyat of safav ivrit modernit, the revival of the language, could contain with it both angles. On one hand, an amazing promise of the renewal of our ancestral language in our holy land. At the same time, the dulling of concepts, because sof kol sof, when we think of things in modern Hebrew, I talk about this with my Israeli students all the time, Ben Yehuda paskins on that meaning. That's not necessarily the full meaning of the word. Ben Yehuda decided what certain words were going to mean, but that's not the same thing as Rashi and the Radak. It's not the same thing as Rashi and the Rashbam. That's not the same thing as the Ralbag. That's not the same as the Midrash. When the translation is lost, and we're lost in translation, so then it dims the light of our eyes. Rav Freifeld, Rav Huttner's great Talmud, one time expressed in a question and answer about why Hasidim didn't like modern Hebrew. He explained it once by saying, language has its infancy, it has its maturity, and it also has its senility. Language, just like a person, grows, and it grows, it becomes, that's the English language one can understand from the beginning of Beowulf, right? The English of Beowulf is not the English that we speak, much less the English of Shakespeare. And nowadays, you know, that language, the English language has almost become senile. He was talking in the 80s, 70s, 80s, by calling somebody a cool cat. Right? You try to explain to Shakespeare and you tell them, oh, he's a cool cat. Right? And you wouldn't know what that means. Or, you know, you'd say somebody's square. It means he's not culturally competent. Or nowadays where the kids would say slay. Right? So slay is a good thing, it's a bad thing. Or when I was a kid, it's sick. You know? It's sick. What is it? Sick is a good thing, is a bad thing. Language has senility. Language loses itself, can lose itself also. So this is part and parcel of the exile of language. And a person's estrangement from language, then also that's dark, the darkness, that's part of the darkness of Tevis. I'll give you another example. That so much of Tevis revolves around the fact that most of the world celebrated a New Year's Day. Right? The idea of counting a New Year's Day, we talked about this a little bit on Sunday morning. The idea of the New Year's Day. They're counting from when they think their Messiah was born. Right? The technically speaking, the bris of the Messiah. This,
they
you know,
even think that's the day.
Right? Absolutely. But
they
but they'll still go with this fiction anyway. But you can tell the Jewish underpinnings. Why? Because the birth, we're not so concerned about, but the bris, you know, there's probably some bagels, some lox. So that's the Jewish underpinning of the entire calendar system. Is we're counting from his bris. Why? Nobody remembers he was born, but then there was a bris, you know. You should have seen the lox. You should have seen the sable, the eggs and the coffee, right? That was it. Maybe a ruggle at the side. You know, it's getting close to time we can eat again. So we're thinking. So what's the year? Who controls the time? How do we count and what from do we count? You rename things. You give things new names. Language has a control in the way that we speak about things. Well, this will end. The Nachman in the 18th Torah in Likutei Moran talks about three different types of language. There's the language of the rest of the world. There's Lashon Kodesh. And then there's Targum. Targum can mean one of two things. Targum can mean, as they say in Yiddish, Teich, where we translate into Aramaic. And Targum also means literally the translation. Targum, where we talk about Lashon Kodesh, right? It's a holy language entirely from the world of Kodesh, from that entire world of sanctity, of sanctum. And then the rest of the world, it's the language of the secular. And then there's one language which is in the middle. It's a middleman, it's a middle ground, it has properties of both, that's Targum. We use Aramaic as Targum, although nowadays, big people explain that Yiddish has elements of that, Judeo-Arabic. Jewish English, and what's the Spanish? Jewish Spanish again?
Ladino.
Thank you. I'm like, tip my tongue, Ladino, because it's an intermixing of these concepts. They can go both either up or down, and through our translation, so Rabbi Nachman and Rav Shagar, one of the great Israeli Rosh Hashiva, explained that translation. All of us have an inner language of our own Lashon Kodesh. But we have to start translating our inner thoughts while we're trying to talk to somebody else. To really express what's really on my mind, language sometimes fails us because the concepts are oftentimes too big for the words that we have. As we speak words, as we try to express ourselves, that already becomes a translation of my inner thoughts. It doesn't always contain it properly. And part of our task is trying to make sense of ourselves and make sense of our world, words, to really get to what that inner meaning is really all about. And that's what today is all about. Because if we can redeem our language, if we can look deeply, right, if try to understand the more depth in Torah, understand more depth about ourselves, the biggest exile is oftentimes the exile from ourselves, as I've told you before, from Rav Kook. Or as the Baal Shem Tov famously said, forgetting is exile. But you know what remembering is? Remembering is redemption. May we merit to be able to get to the point of what we're really, really talking about. We're really, really saying, to go a little deeper and to exit the exile, an exile of speech, the surrounding exile of darkness. And Hashem, very, very soon, with a Gula Shlema Amitis. Let's have a mind.